This morning, what a treat. We have Pastor Craig to bring the word to us.
We call that a smattering of applause. I want to thank Melissa and Steve. Melissa was Molly Rose's predecessor here at Normal Heights Church, if you didn't know that. She's a gifted pastor. Truly, she has extraordinary gifts as a pastor, whatever she's doing in her life, whatever direction she goes. And I'm so grateful to have gotten to know her and to still know her. Yes, thank you. And also a big thank you to our music team, led by Sam. Huge. I mean, this extraordinary talent all around. All of our musicians have such gifts. You know, I've been in many churches, and in many churches, the A team is nowhere as good as all of the people who serve on different Sundays here, coming from the congregation or folks who are regular. Really appreciate it. And thank you, Melissa, for your work this morning. Really appreciate it. I also want to thank you for hanging in there with this Hebrews text. What a mouthful. I mean, it's got all kinds of problems in addition to the violence. But I mean, my personal belief and approach is all this stuff has to be dealt with. You know, it's there. Let's deal with it one way or another. That's my approach. There are plenty of ways to deal with it. And if you're, some of the texts it refers to in the Old Testament are extraordinary in how explicit they are. I mean, one reads like the script of a really graphic horror movie. I mean, it's really amazing. You know, so if you're squeamish, don't read that part of the Old Testament. And if you're wondering, and you really are in that place where you want to deal with texts like this, join Ashley's study. Ashley Gibbs' study, which starts 3 weeks from this morning. It's going to be, a four-week study, I think. It's extraordinary that she wants to look into those texts with her theologian colleagues in a serious way and see what are some ways we can deal with these things really, really, because they're there. There's information about that in the weekly emails if you need it. This is the book of Hebrews is often referred to as the letter to the Hebrews, and occasionally it's listed among the letters of Paul, but neither of those is true. Hebrews is more of a word of exhortation or discourse. It has a little sort of letter thing added at the end, but the rest of it reads just like a treatise, kind of. And it's also almost certainly not written by Paul. It uses very different language and refers to things that Paul may not have known about. It's written in the second half of the first century, and in the Jewish Christian community, things were a mess. Followers were losing hope. It's a common story when you go through the letters in the Old Testament. Followers are losing hope, so the author reminds them of what so many endured to get to where they were, and that's why the author rehearses, brings out summarizes the Old Testament narratives. It's sort of a treatise on endurance and aimed at a very particular audience. That's what this text is this morning. And you know, endurance is hard. Endurance is hard when something unexpected happens to us or someone close to us. You know, it's easy to say and talk about, and it's easy to write memes about and to forward memes about, but it's really hard. Endurance is hard right now. In 2025, when we read or hear yet another deeply troubling news story, and another, it reminds me of this symbol I learned a few years ago, the international symbol for exasperation. You know what that international symbol is? You geez, you know, we read these news stories, or we hear from someone we know who has been, as Cynthia and I did, who's been intimidated by an ICE agent without any cause except maybe his accent or the color of his skin, or the incident we heard in the prayers this morning, or as Molly talked about last week, someone is simply taken away as they're legally pursuing their options for asylum in this country. Fill in the blank with your own examples of things happening in the news. You can probably read the news right at this moment and come up with about 10 examples. It's just wrong. It's wrong. So, now that I've gotten myself all excited, I want to take a breath, and I want to turn things around for a moment. Do you have those moments when you just know life is right? You know life is good. You're living, you're doing your usual things, maybe you're not noticing much, and then when you're not expecting it, there's that moment when life is eloquent. Those are the words of theologian Friedrich Buechner. Life is eloquent. It's as if your own life is speaking to you with something it needs to say, whether you want to pay attention or not. Those of you who regularly meditate, you use your practice to be in touch with these indescribable moments, which are some combination of warmth, light, serenity, rightness, peace, and connection with goodness that's all around us, beyond ourselves. And I think these are moments of hope. Hope beyond ourselves. Call it divine hope. If we really get down to it, this is what all of us are seeking in this life, really. Think about it. And it can happen in the midst of daily life when we're not expecting it. You know, I've had those moments. I'm sure you have too. And you can maybe think of them right now. I have three examples. One was when I was in high school, a long time ago. In gym class, there was a guy who, for some reason, started to taunt and bully me. I have no idea why. I've been through lots of stuff as a kid, but this was the first time I've been singled out. I'm not a clinical psychologist, but it's clear to me that bullying is an expression of a very ugly side of human nature, and it originates in children or teenagers who have a serious problem. They need help and don't know it, or they don't know how to get it. So they act out, belittling or degrading others, or worse. The thing about bullying is that until it's dealt with in a bully's life, it just goes on and gets worse. And the person becomes an adult, maybe a sophisticated adult. I've dealt with people like that. And the bullying takes new forms. I was more fortunate than many at this time because I could escape bullying. And somehow, I had come to know that it wasn't normal. Normal was home. Normal was dinner with my family, going to a friend's house on Saturday, hanging out with the kids in my neighborhood, getting in trouble, going to church on Sundays to make up for it. And this church was full of all these nice older people who mostly liked having me there. Or I'd go on a youth group retreat for a weekend. That was normal. My life was not all ideal and sunny. I had got into trouble. I had a lot of problems, pain, and arguments. And church especially could be so boring. But whatever problems there were, ultimately I could know that there were places of warmth, light, peace, stillness, and love available to me. They were there. So I ignored the bully. It was uncomfortable, especially when he got louder and more physical. It was hard, it got harder, but I ignored him. So I'm sure the teacher noticed too. You know, that's an interesting thing. He never said anything to me. I simply endured, and over several weeks, this bully simply stopped. I don't know what happened, but one day it dawned on me that the bullying had stopped. I don't know what happened, but one day it just happened. You know, that's a great expression, by the way, dawned on me. That's like perfect. It was one of those times when my own life spoke to me. It was then I realized that even if I didn't realize it when the bullying was happening, on some level, as unpleasant as it was, I knew I could make it through. I knew I could make it. At the time, I didn't know how exactly, but that sense of getting through it, as I look back on that incident, is as clear to me today as it was then. And I think that was because I had a dependable place of warmth, light, peace, stillness, and love. By the way, you know, I was too embarrassed to talk to my parents about being bullied. That was a mistake. But I was just too embarrassed. It's always best to talk to somebody. The second time I want to talk to you about was much later in my life. I was dealing with a professional crisis because I was making a big change in what my organization was doing. So the people who were working for me and the people I was working for, none of them liked it. Some powerful people didn't like it, and they let it be known to my boss, my boss's boss, to the newspapers who wrote about it, causing a deluge of nasty letters and phone calls, including from representatives of the state government. It was tough. I'm feeling it now. It's coming back to me. It was tough, to say the least, and it went on for a long time. At this time in my life, I was going regularly to a midweek church service. It was Wednesday nights. It was simple, quiet, small. There were about 30 people each week. We gathered to hear music and a scripture reading, say some liturgy, and receive communion. And on the weeks when this crisis was unfolding, you know, I remember so vividly sitting in that sanctuary each week in the fading evening light, and I began to think, well, here I am again with all of these other travelers who have their own problems, and knowing some of them, they were serious problems, and we're all back in this beautiful place again to think, reflect, have communion quietly and simply. And it began to dawn on me that this was the real thing, the constant thing. This is where I could find warmth, light, peace, stillness, and love. It was always right there in that place with those others every week, however difficult life may be anywhere else. And by the way, that experience wound up eventually changing my life. And it's why I'm here today. The third time happened 9 years ago. I was watching the Olympics. Every 4 years, you know, the Olympics come on. They're entertaining. They're often inspiring. We hear lots of stories about athletes who've overcome incredible problems. They've transcended problems. So many have come from difficult circumstances. You know, that year we heard about the amazing, this guy was lightning fast runner. His name was English Gardner. His parents were once unhoused for quite a while. And Tori Bowie, she grew up very poor in Mississippi with her grandmother. She won the silver medal in the 100 meters that year. So anyway, late one night, my wife had gone to bed. I was watching, and on came the finals for the shot put. You know, I always thought the shot put originated as part of ancient Greek competition, you know, but it was actually the Scots who invented it. Did you know that? in the first century. You know, the Scots also invented golf. And it'd be interesting to see shot put combined with golf. Although I guess you'd have to yell four really, really loud and get out of the way really, really quick. Anyway, I was watching the shot put, and Michelle Carter comes out to throw. Michelle Carter, she'd been through a lot to get to the Olympics. She had struggled in school through her life, and at that time she learned she was dyslexic and had ADHD, struggled with that her whole life. And she was strongly built. She was a big human being, strongly built, really gifted that way. She comes out to throw. She's in distant second place. In first is the winner of the last two gold medals. So as she steps into the circle to throw, the announcer says, she's going to need a long one to win the gold medal. So she takes a couple of breaths and calmly gets down low and makes the throw. It's a picture of extraordinary grace and balance and power and focus. And she begins to stand and spin, releasing the heavy shot put high in the air. And she just continues to spin just about a full 360 degrees. She lowers her body to just about the same crouch she started from, except now she is balancing on one foot perfectly. And the shot put sails to 20.63 meters, farther than she's ever thrown it, farther than any American woman has ever thrown it, and farther than the current gold medal winner can throw it. She wins the gold medal. The sight of this human being doing this, you know, watching this grace-filled effort, this great goodness and possibility of life, you know, it struck me that these athletes, all of them, just to get there, have trained so hard and have come from such incredibly difficult circumstances, so many of them, the training and accomplishment often as a way to not just escape their lives, but to transcend, to endure. So I watched all this, and I turned off the TV. I took a moment to look around the room. It was quiet. It's late. And I think, here I am in my safe and secure house. I have everything I need. It's a place of warmth, light, peace, stillness, and love. As is this community of faith, Normal Heights United Church, full of good people. We all deal with pain and challenge. Sometimes we disagree, but all of us together, we at least try to do the right thing. We try to make a difference. And then we show up the next day and we try again, and again, and again. We are not alone. There is caring and support here for each of us. In a very real way, we're surrounded by what our Hebrews reading calls the great cloud of witnesses. We each come having tasted failure and fear, and we have too often seen, maybe just this morning, greed and heartlessness. Yet the cloud of witnesses surrounds each of us. And that cloud begins to appear at the hour of our greatest need. We will get through this together. And we will not just endure, we will prevail. Amen.